And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, and you have tuned in to the Bowl Ranking Show. Joining me, as he does for so many of these shows, and he is the man whose rankings we'll be working off of, it is Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, you had a quick turnaround with this post, and of course, if you are on CBSSports.com right now, just go in, look up for a link. It'll be right here by the player to Tom's post, where he has ranked all 35 of the bowl games. Are you having any second thoughts? Or are you still feeling pretty firm as far as the order that you had? And you said it on Sunday night or Monday.
I feel pretty firm. It wasn't that hard for me to figure out. I mean, what I did essentially was, I mean, you know how I rank every single team.
Right.
What I did was I started with a base of, I went through the games, and based on their rankings in my formula, I added them up. Like, say, the 75th ranked team and the 68th team, I would add the 75 and 68. And essentially, the lower the number, the better the bowl.
Okay,
I used that as a baseline. And then I did make some tweaks with opinions because, you know, based on rankings, I felt like the Fiesta Bowl was a bit too high because my rankings enjoyed both UCF and Baylor a bit too much, but I still don't feel like that's a top game. So, you know, I moved it to 7. So I made little adjustments here and there, but for the most part, this is based entirely off my team rankings.
Okay, and of course, if you are a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that Tom does do a full breakdown. He did the best, worst 10 using these rankings. We had his top 30 in with every rewind post of the season, and now I know it is the basis for the team rankings. Before we get rolling, there is a ton of bowl preview information at CBSSports.com. We have 35 different bowl previews. We have your confidence pools picks. We have against the spread, straight up, everything that you need for any kind of holiday fun with the bowl games. Be sure to go to CBSSports.com and check it out. So we will begin in reverse order, working our way to number one. At 35, you've got the New Mexico Bowl, Colorado State and Washington State. 34, the New Orleans Bowl, which is Louisiana Lafayette and Tulane. 33, Pinstripe Bowl, 32 with Notre Dame and Rutgers in Yankee Stadium. 32, Armed Forces Bowl between Middle Tennessee and Navy. And 31, the Heart of Dallas Bowl between UNLV and North Texas. Let's start right there at the Pinstripe Bowl. Notre Dame, Rutgers, some injuries on the Fighting Irish side. Rutgers sort of limped their way to bowl eligibility. It is their 8th time in 9 seasons, but you had 3 losses there before finally getting a victory on the last day. Who do you think is going to want it more in this game?
Oh, man. It's just a very disappointing matchup, isn't it?
I mean, it really is.
Because you think it's the letdown bowl in this first group, because the Pinstripe Bowl, it's not like a premier bowl, but it's at Yankee Stadium, which is a really cool venue, and it's like a second week bowl, and yet here it is as one of the 5 worst, one of the 3 worst, and it's because, like you mentioned, Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of its key players on defense. You know, Louis Nix won't be playing, and other players won't, guys. And then Rutgers, I mean, no offense to Rutgers. It's a matchup of two teams who had disappointing seasons. Notre Dame's coming off a game, you know, a national championship game, and now it's going to the Pinstripe Bowl, and it's pretending to be excited and happy about it. And Rutgers is a team that's been good, you know, the last few years, and suddenly drops to 6-6 and barely gets to 6-6 at that. So it's not the greatest matchup. It's not really a two great teams. It's just kind of blah all around. And I think Notre Dame will win simply because it's probably a lot better than Rutgers, but at the same time, that's the funny thing about all these bowl games is a lot of it always just seems to come down to which team even wants to be there.
We picked this game at 16.5, and my number one confidence pick against the spread is Rutgers plus 16.5, just for the sheer reason that last year this was a snow game. It's been close recently, and especially like you said, when we've got questionable motivation on both sides, I just kind of wonder if it's going to be ugly, at least I hope it snows again so it's fun to watch.
Yeah, the snow would help. I've got Notre Dame straight up at 30 on my confidence, and I think I had against the spread, I got Rutgers. Where did I put that number at? Right, Rutgers is an 8 for me in our little confidence pool. So, I'm hoping for some snow. just something to make this game interesting, because I don't think the two teams by themselves are going to do a very good job of it.
Number 31, as we said, the Heart of Dallas Bowl, UNLV in North Texas. Before we move on, I will say neither of these teams has had much postseason success or even really postseason experience. UNLV here for the first time, I think, since 2000, North Texas since 2004. It's New Year's Day. It's 12 o'clock. The other games don't get started till 1. I mean, just watch for an hour, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, this is what annoys me about this game, though, because I actually am interested in seeing these two teams for the same reasons you mentioned, just because they're not usually in this position. But why the hell is the Heart of Dallas Bowl playing on New Year's Day?
I don't know.
Nobody is going to watch your game. Nobody is going to come to your game. When all the New Year's Day bowl games are going on, who the hell is saying, I want to go watch the Heart of Dallas Bowl?
Well, there's certainly not a lot of motivation for UNLV, because it's like, we can do New Year's Eve in Las Vegas or New Year's Eve at the Heart of Dallas Bowl. Not ideal.
Yeah, it sucks, because I really would like to watch it. But there's, like you said, there's no way I'm watching that game once the other games start on that morning.
No, unless you get it in the bowl draft.
Well,
multiple screens. We've got multiple screens.
You know what the worst thing about doing these rankings was? Now you and Jerry have my draft chart.
Oh, that's
you guys will know exactly where I'm looking to go based on my rankings. You'll be like, oh, I better draft this one because he's going to go for it next.
Well, it's we will always be fair in our bowl draft. All right, let's number 30, the Hawaii Bowl, a Christmas Eve tradition unlike any other. This year it'll have Boise State without Chris Peterson going up against a Oregon State team that finished 6-6. 29, you've got Minnesota and Syracuse in the Texas Bowl with no sponsor, just the state of Texas. Rice and Mississippi State in the Liberty Bowl at 28. Buffalo and San Diego State, number 27 in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Ole Miss and Georgia Tech at number 26 in the Music City Bowl. Let's start right at the Music City Bowl. Ole Miss, Georgia Tech. This seems like a game to me that could end up being very, very entertaining, particularly with Georgia Tech kind of making games weird sometimes. Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss, they'll get creative. Maybe we'll get some Robert Kimdichie at running back again. But I could also see this one being kind of ugly. Kind of like the Georgia Tech-USC Sun Bowl last year that was exciting but still kind of ugly.
Yeah, you know, what I think this game comes down to is how Ole Miss wants to spend its extra practices preparing for the game. Because that's the one thing about when you play teams with an option offense in a bowl game, and I actually moved this up a spot or two, I think, if I remember, because just the novelty of the option. But at the same time, if you've got a month to prepare for it, or, you know, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks to prepare for an option offense, it's really not that hard to stop. The question becomes, does Ole Miss spend its practices preparing for next season or preparing to stop Georgia Tech?
Yeah, good call.
Because if they prepare to stop Georgia Tech, option offenses tend to struggle in bowl games. So I think Ole Miss, talent-wise, and if they're prepared for it, could easily blow Georgia Tech out of the water. But like you said, like, if Ole Miss is preparing for next season, this is a game where it could get uglied up and could get interesting.
Minnesota and Syracuse in that Texas Bowl, you've got it at number 29, and you make a good point that while it may seem like a December 27th bowl game would be a disappointment for the Golden Gophers, you have to like for as far as program building goes, you have to like a 6-6 Syracuse team as an opponent rather than an SEC team on one of those New Year's Day games.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota deserved a much better bowl game than the Texas Bowl. They deserved a New Year's Day game in Florida against the SEC team. But yeah, this is a game they're more likely to win because they switched with Nebraska. So basically, and if you put Minnesota up against Georgia, I'm not liking Minnesota's chances very much. So I think, you know, getting Syracuse, which is a team they should beat, and getting to 9 wins is a very nice coda to what was a surprising and happy season.
Yeah, Minnesota struggled a little bit offensively down the stretch of the season in conference play. Syracuse does have a pretty good defense, but there's just not enough offensive firepower to think that Syracuse is going to be able to do anything. They won a lot of ugly games. I'm with you. I've got the Golden Gophers winning that.
First team to 14 wins,
yeah,
pretty
seriously
much.
That's what this one might be like. Any thoughts on Boise State, Oregon State? I mean, I just think the Beavers just weren't a very good team at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Beavers just crashed back to reality hard at the end of the year. And also with Boise State, that's the other thing with bowl games. You know, Chris Peterson's gone, so they've hired Harsin, but they're going to have the interim coach, you know, for the bowl game. So you never know how a team's going to react when they're playing for a coach that probably won't be on the staff next year.
True. Bob Gregory, that associate head coach, will be coaching the game. All right, we are moving right along. Number 25, the GoDaddy Bowl, Ball State and Arkansas State. News breaking today, like you just said, Brian Harsin will be gone. Arkansas State, third straight year in the GoDaddy Bowl, third straight year that you're doing it without your head coach. Ball yeah. State, Pete Limbo, in conversations for the Wake Forest job and maybe a few others, but the Wake Forest job going to Dave Clawson. Do you think – here's a question. We are sitting here on December 11th. Do you think Pete Limbo is coaching Ball State in this game on January 5th?
It's like I wrote in the rankings piece. I said there's a very good chance that both of these teams will be playing under interim coaches by the time this game is played. I do think Limbo will be gone.
Yeah.
Especially now that there's the reports that Narduzzi's turned down the UConn gig, I think Limbo is where UConn goes from there. So I think he's a guy that's had his name mentioned at a lot of places, and I think he's pretty much done everything he can at Ball State to earn that job. And I don't know if staying at Ball State is really what's best in his interest for the long term. So I don't think he'll be there, but. Number, this game is played.
At number 24, you've got the AdvoCare V100 Bowl, the pyramid scheme of bowl games, but a very, very interesting matchup in Arizona's Kadeem Carey and Boston College's Andre Williams. This is going to be a game. Both of these running backs will carry the ball 35 to 40 times if need be, and neither of these run defenses is very good. I think it'll be fun, but I like running backs. Did you boost it up? Because I realize 7-5, 7-5, particularly with these two teams, neither of them is very high in your ranking. But I love the Williams Carey matchup.
Yeah, this got bumped up a few spots simply because of that Carey Williams matchup. Because it's two really good running backs, one of whom is a Heisman finalist, and one of whom probably could have been. So I got it this high simply because of that. These are two running backs that most people probably didn't get a chance to see a lot of during the season, but they are very good. So you get an opportunity to see them both playing at the same time.
ECU in Ohio in the Beef of Brady's Bowl at 23. Cincinnati in North Carolina in the Belk Bowl at 22. Bowling Green and Pittsburgh in the Little Caesars Bowl at 21, and Marshall and Maryland in the Military Bowl at 20. Marshall and Maryland, this is sort of a regional game, as the game will be in Annapolis. It'll be 30 minutes from College Park. The Bowling Green Pitt game, I don't know. Let's see, Dave Clawson will be gone. Pittsburgh, they're very, very glad to not be going to Birmingham for the BBVA yes. Compass Bowl.
You know what? You're finally happy to not be going to Birmingham, and you're going to Detroit.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I'm kind of struggling with this Little Caesars matchup here because Bowling Green, 10-3, MAC champions. They slowed down Jordan Lynch, but Clawson will be gone. This is a very interesting game for me. If you are a MAC fan and you're looking towards next year's MACtion, Bowling Green is going to have a lot of these players back next season. Do you think that they're going to show up, or are you wondering if motivation is a factor there?
I think they might show up because, I think if you look at a job like Bowling Green, there's a very good shot that with Clawson leaving, there's a very good shot that the guy who's left is interim. A lot of the coaches on the staff get promoted and right. are back on that staff next year. So if you're playing on that team, you've got motivation to play since, these coaches could be your coaches next season. It's more likely. But there's certainly a chance where they won't play. But at the same time, you're playing an ACC team, and as a MAC team, and you just won the MAC title. Your coach is gone, sure, but you're getting the chance to play a BCS conference team and getting the opportunity to beat a Pitt team, even if it's just a 6-6 Pitt team, is, it's something worth playing for.
Yep, I agree with you there. Belk Bowl, always fun, as you mentioned in the post, always fun to follow along on Twitter. And in Cincinnati and North Carolina, Cincinnati last year came back and beat Duke in sort of heartbreaking fashion for the Blue Devils and thrilling fashion if you're a Bearcats fan. I like this matchup. I'm not necessarily saying it should be higher than 22 because neither team has been that great throughout the season. Cincinnati only faced two teams all year that finished with a winning record, and FBS teams with winning records. North Carolina started 1-5, finished 6-6. But both teams have players that could rip off a huge play at any time. And with both teams being inconsistent and it being a bowl game, it feels like we might have one of those crazy finishes again.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a high insanity you know, factor in this game. There's high potential for that because, like you said, there's talent on both teams. They're not great teams, but they're very talented in certain spots. And what kept it as low as it is that North Carolina's rank, even though they finished the season strong, the beginning of the season kept they had a lot of ground to make up for in my rankings, and that kind of dragged the overall ranking of this game down.
Well, they had a lot to make up for on the season. Mm-hmm. The defense really struggled early and sort of came together late, almost held together by duct tape. Big for Larry Fedora, though. They were ineligible for the postseason last year, and to be 6-6 and get those extra bowl practices, very, very good for the program. Number 19, Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, Michigan and Kansas State. Let's roll through the next five, then we'll come back to that one. 18, BBVA Compass, Vanderbilt and Houston. 17, the Holiday Bowl, Arizona State and Texas Tech. 16, the Poinsettia Bowl, Utah State and Northern Illinois. 15, the Fight Hunger Bowl between BYU and Washington. Back to Michigan and Kansas State. Fascinating game, but not necessarily unbelievably intriguing for me. I mean, I'm interested to know how both teams will show up and play, but I'm not necessarily going to clear my schedule to make sure that I'm not doing anything else for this game.
I have a hard time believing Michigan shows up.
Really?
I really do. I mean, dang, just the way that the season has gone, it's so, and to end up in a Buffalo, I mean, Michigan generally, even in the 7-5 years in the past, you know, under Rich Rod, they went 7-5. They played in the Gator Bowl, you know, a New Year's Day bowl game in Florida. And Michigan, with its giant fan base, was still getting passed up at bowl games simply because I don't think the bowl games wanted them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to play in the Buffalo Wild Week Bowl, which is a bowl that's generally set aside since it's been affiliated with the Big Ten for mid-tier Big Ten teams. You know, the Minnesotas and the Iowas of the conference have been going to this bowl game. For Michigan to be there just kind of feels, you know, can't feel good for the Wolverines. And it's like I tweeted the other day when the bowls were all being announced. I said, in 3 years, Brady Hoke has taken the Wolverines from the Sugar Bowl to the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. That's a tough drop. So I have a hard time thinking Michigan shows up. Kansas State, on the flip side, is also coming, you know, a disappointment this year based on what we've seen in recent years. But considering the way their season started, they're actually coming into this game with more momentum and will likely be more excited to be playing in it.
Yeah, I think there's Michigan should win this game. I have zero confidence that they will.
Yeah, I mean, just their ability to beat themselves combined with Bill Snyder's magic, I have a hard time thinking Michigan will win this game.
Like we said, Vanderbilt and Houston. I got a feeling Arizona State. Ooh, is this going to be a letdown spot for Arizona State or a time for Kingsbury to try and rally Texas Tech back after dropping five straight to finish the season?
I hope Arizona State shows up for this game because it's certainly, you know, to be playing Texas Tech is certainly below their level for a bowl game, but it's just the way the Pac-12, you know, bowl tie-ins have worked. But I feel like this could be a game that lives up to the Holiday Bowl's history of having awesome games, you know, where it's like 49-45 kind of games, because both of these teams have that kind of offense. I don't know if Texas Tech really has enough talent overall to keep up if Arizona State really shows up, but I think this game has the potential to be pretty damn fun.
Baker Mayfield struggled in near the back half of the season. There are murmurs around Lubbock that he might be looking elsewhere. You know, this might be a time for if Davis Webb wants to or whoever wants to step in and try and get a hold of the quarterback competition moving forward might be an opportunity. Utah State and Northern Illinois, I've mentioned this before in other places, but Jordan Lynch has, you know, you and I have said that. He made a great name for himself running over MAC linebackers. Utah State ain't exactly a MAC defense. I think this will be a very, very interesting game. Looking forward to it a lot.
Yeah, I said, this is a game that the college football hipsters are going to love because Utah State, Northern Illinois, you know, from the Mountain West and the MAC are two teams that the hipster college football fans have been touting for a few years now. So to see them on the same field facing each other will be very interesting to a lot of people. I don't know how interesting this game will be to an, you know, average college football fan, but I'm really looking forward to it. And also simply because it's going to be Jordan Lynch's last game. And whether you think, you know, he's good enough to really be in Heisman consideration, and I've made my opinion on that known in the past, he's still really fun to watch as a college football player. So it's one last chance to see him play.
And also, by the way, very, very it's cool, and it, or I don't know. I like the fact that Dave Doran, and of course Dave Doran had you know, the bricks sort of set in place before him, but this is two coaches of these two programs that have been promoted from within, Matt Wells at Utah State, Rod Carey at Northern Illinois, and it seems like they're going to be there for a while and at least maintain the success. Utah State went 8-5, but they won the division, and they almost beat Fresno State in that Mountain West title game.
And they did it after losing Chucky Keaton.
Yeah, with a freshman quarterback for the whole back half of the season.
You know, if Chucky Keaton's healthy and playing in this game, it's probably in my top 10.
Right.
Chucky Keaton versus Jordan Lynch.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, BYU and Washington. I have huge question marks here. I have no idea what Washington team shows up. I have no idea what BYU team shows up. I mean, this is the same BYU team that knocked off Texas and has played very well for three quarters against Wisconsin. This is the same Washington team that, you know, got beat down and sort of run over by Arizona State, but also, you know, looked very, very talented, particularly with Bishop Sankey, one of the nation's best running backs, not named Kadeem Carey or Andre Williams. This is, as with both teams being a coin flip, I feel like it's, you know, talking about probabilities before we got on, but it's like 25% chance it's awesome, 25% chance that it's kind of lame, and we're probably going to fall somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it, like we've already mentioned, with Washington being under the interim coach, it's hard to know what team shows up. It's a good team, and you know, it's 8-4, and it's four losses all came to four really good, very, you know, very good teams. And analytically, like, the quote unquote nerd stats for football love Washington. So it's a very good team. BYU, I love BYU's defense. I love the matchup. I hope both teams show up simply because I want to see the matchup of Bishop Sankey versus BYU's defense. I just think that could be fun to watch for 3 hours.
It could be fun to watch. Jamal Williams, BYU running back, kind of broke out and was nasty at the end of the year. Got him circled as a player to watch moving forward. Particularly, isn't Riley Nelson is a senior? Is he going to be gone?
You mean Taysom Hill?
Taysom Hill, yeah.
Yeah, Taysom Hill will be playing for BYU. It's going to be a fun matchup, and this could also be another one of those games that's over in 3 hours, if the way things might go.
Again, we like that. Number 14, the Gator Bowl, Nebraska and Georgia. Number 13, the Sun Bowl, Virginia Tech and UCLA. Number 12, the Outback Bowl, Iowa and LSU. 11, the Las Vegas Bowl between Fresno State and USC. We are getting up here on the top 10. Nebraska and Georgia were missing both quarterbacks, and they played in the Capital One Bowl last year. But still, how about this? What are you expecting from Nebraska in this game?
It's strange. It ranges from I don't think Nebraska has a chance to I think Nebraska could win this game. Simply, I mean, it's hard to know because with the dysfunction or the seeming dysfunction surrounding that team that's been there all year that you kind of see from the outside, it's hard to really predict how this team is going to perform from a week-to-week basis. But while they won't have Taylor Martinez, that's not exactly a new problem for them. They've been without Taylor Martinez all year for the most part. So they know how to play without him, whereas Georgia just lost Aaron Murray, and Hudson Mason played all right, but they struggled against Georgia Tech before, you know, coming back to win that game. So I don't know if Georgia will really have a great game against Nebraska. So I wouldn't be surprised just simply because they're used to playing without their quarterback that they win.
I have no idea what to think about that game either.
And because if you're Georgia too, with all the injuries that you've had and like you just throw Aaron Murray on the top of the pile like that, it's very likely you just want to get the damn season done.
Yeah. Let's see. We got Virginia Tech and UCLA. It's high on the list, obviously, because both teams are very successful. Virginia Tech's defense is phenomenal, and I like your point. Miles Jack against the Virginia Tech front with players like Derek Hopkins, James Gale, Luther Maddy. You got Jack Tyler, the linebacker.
I'm smiling
position.
Just listening to you say it.
Tariq Edwards. I mean, it is going to be awesome to watch them go against each other. I made this point in my Sun Bowl preview. The one time when UCLA has struggled a bit this season has been because they are outmatched on the offensive line against an inferior defensive line, and the team has been able to get pressure on Brett Hundley. That happened against Arizona State, that happened against Stanford, and that even happened against Oregon. I feel like that's kind of the equalizer here because I've got very little confidence that Logan Thomas and the Virginia Tech offense will be able to find much success against the Bruins.
You know, I think this game might be closer than, you know, like the initial thought would be simply because Virginia Tech. But yeah, for the exact same reason, because Virginia Tech's front seven will, I think, give UCLA's offense some trouble and will be able to keep this a low scoring game where, you know, first team to 20 wins. And I think Virginia Tech, not great on offense, but certainly capable of getting to 20 points.
Or at least they can get a pick six or use special teams or something like
Kyle Fuller makes a play. Strange, you know what I mean? Something happens.
Iowa and LSU. This is tell me about this one because I've got no idea. Iowa played to the level of its competition. That sort of, you and I have talked about that. That seems to have been the theme throughout the year. You'd expect a good performance from the Hawkeyes in this game. You know that you will not have Zach Mettenberger, so you will have Jennings, right? Anthony Jennings in there at quarterback. You still got Jeremy Hill. You still got Odell Beckham. You still got Jarvis Landry. Are those guys going to be focused on the NFL, or are they going to be out here trying to get one more win for the Tigers?
That is the great question of this game. I think stylistically, they're very similar as far as teams go. You know, they both run pro-style kind of offenses. I think LSU's got more talent and overall than Iowa does by far, but like you said, will LSU without Mettenberger, will guys like Beckham and Landry really be into this game, or will, you know, it just be kind of, you know, a showcase more than anything before they move on to the NFL? You don't know. It's hard to really say for sure, but I do think LSU wins this game, but I also feel like, you know, if you look at all of Les Miles' quarterbacks that weren't named Zach Mettenberger, you never really know what you're going to get. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them struggle mightily on offense because this Iowa defense is pretty good, and it's very good in the red zone too. So I think Iowa could stay in this game, and if make a play or two along the way, they might pull off an upset.
That, forcing field goals, and Iowa's defense, like you said, been very good against the run this year. Because I would think that with Jennings in there, your sort of standard game plan is just feed the rock to Jeremy Hill like 30 times.
I would imagine that will be the plan, yes.
And yeah.
I don't know that Iowa will stand up to that for a whole 60 minutes.
Okay, yeah, good point. All right, number 11, Las Vegas Bowl, Fresno State and USC. USC will be coached by offensive coordinator Clay Helton after Coach Orgeron resigned from his post. Steve Sarkisian has been speaking to the players and trying to work on bringing them together. Fresno State coming off that Mountain West title game win, it will be the final game for Derek Carr. He and Davante Adams have been just absolutely fantastic this season. I like this game. It is one of two in-state bowl matchups as far as matchups of teams in the same state. Probably got a lot of talent and California natives on both squads, and it's in Las Vegas. I think it'll have a New Year's Day feel, but it's on December 21st, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, I mean, Las Vegas Bowl got a lottery ticket for essentially in this game because it is literally the second bowl game that will be played, but it also features two ranked teams.
Yeah.
So if you think about what we talked about earlier, the Heart of Dallas Bowl, which is on New Year's Day with UNLV and North Texas, and then this game is on December 21st with Fresno State and USC. It makes absolutely no sense, but it's awesome for the Las Vegas Bowl because I think this will be a very good game. And I think UCLA is USC is the favorite even with the interim coach and all that stuff going on simply because I have visions of Fresno State's defense just being run over by the USC rushing attack all day. But I also feel like Fresno State's offense is good enough to where it could make a game out of it. So I'm looking forward to this one.
It will depend, in my opinion. I think you're absolutely right. USC has an advantage in that they will be able to dictate sort of how the game plays out with their own rushing attack, which they should have. They should not meet very much
USC
resistance.
USC could have three running backs over 100 yards in this game.
Absolutely. It will depend on that USC secondary, which is very, very good and has future NFL players, if they're showing up to play or if they're showing up to play poker. Depends on what they're doing in Vegas because that if they let Derek Carr sort of sit out there and sling it, then absolutely right, we'll have a shootout. If they stand up and play some lockdown, then the Trojans should be able to win.
Yep.
All right, number 10. Duke and Texas A&M, both teams in the top 25, even though Duke lost 45-0 in Florida State. They secure this game. There was some uncertainty on Sunday whether or not they would be playing in Russell Athletic Bowl or the Chick-fil-A Bowl. They lock down the premier New Year's Eve game in Atlanta. It likely, according to most people and who guess these things, Johnny Manziel's probably his last game in a Aggie uniform, and he will be going up against the Manning mentor after starting the season with headlines about getting kicked out of the Manning Passing Academy. So I like this game for all the different intrigue. As far as the X's and O's and the matchup of the team, Duke, it seems to me, will want to try and run the ball and play a little bit of ball control with Texas A&M's defense being very susceptible against the run, and Duke knowing that they are probably outmatched athletically on the outside with the Johnny Manziel, Mike Evans connection.
Yeah, I don't like the matchup from a football standpoint very much, because I just think Texas A&M has too much talent for Duke. And I think it could end up looking a lot like that Florida State game did. But I put it up here simply, I mean, I had to give the ACC props for actually standing up for Duke.
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you, I mean, the Chick-fil-A Bowl did not want to take Duke. They wanted Miami. But the ACC, you know, Swofford stood up and said, no, you're going to take the team that earned it on the field, even though it's got the tiny little fan base and it might not fill up the stadium, which is what the SEC and Mike Slive would not do for Vanderbilt. So I have to give the ACC props for doing that.
All right, respect. And Miami does go to Tom's number 9 selection, the Russell Athletic Bowl, Miami and Louisville. This game is actually very, very exciting, particularly because Charlie Strong has so many Florida recruits. That has sort of already been the chatter during the week. Guys like Teddy Bridgewater, a Miami native, Eli Rogers, I think Devontae Parker's from Florida. These guys from Louisville are very excited to be heading back to the Sunshine State. This is a big recruiting game, even though they're not allowed to. It is a dead period for recruiting, but both Al Golden and Charlie Strong have talked about the importance of sort of coming into Orlando and, you know, taking care of your business, and it is a chance to showcase your program. These teams will be ACC foes next season, as Louisville will take Maryland's spot in the league. What else do you like about this game?
Yeah, well, first, like you mentioned, if you're Charlie Strong and you'd like to recruit in Florida, what better way to start off with recruits by beating Florida in the Sugar Bowl last year and then beating Miami in a bowl game this year?
Yeah.
I think that's a very good recruiting pitch. Says, yeah, well, I've beaten your home schools. But also, my favorite thing about this game is nothing to do with on the field. It is Louisville defensive line coach Clint Hurt coaching against Miami. So Clint Hurt, who, if you're not familiar with
some
the NCAA violations at Miami that have kept Miami out of bowl games in recent years, allegedly had quite a bit to do with the violations that kept Miami out of the bowl game. So that's a fun matchup for me right there.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Returning to the kind of sort of scene of the alleged crime.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Number 8, the Alamo Bowl. Number 10, Oregon against Texas. Who knows what's going to be going on with Texas? Is Mack Brown coaching this game? Is he coaching in 2014? You know, what we don't know what that situation is going to be. Texas defensively played very well down the stretch of the season. Offensively, Case McCoy just not really getting it done. It seemed like, you know, the only times they were able to really score or move the ball was just a big play here or there, thanks to supreme athletic talent from guys like, you know, Dajay Johnson or whatchamacallit. Oh, crap. I'm just blanking. On the outside, wide receiver, Mike Davis.
Mike Davis.
Yeah. It seemed like it was only that. Oregon, Marcus Mariota is coming back for 2014. You assume, or at least I do, his knee will be healthier than it was at the end of the year. I like the Ducks in this one. You've got it at number 8. I might have it down on the intrigue factor. Convince me.
This game is mostly propped up by the rankings of the two teams. But no, I got it up here. I have a serious question whether Oregon really wants to be in this game.
Okay, that's true. That can
make
it interesting.
First of all, they could feel snubbed by not getting chosen for a BCS game and gotten picked over for Oklahoma. And also, let's remember, you know, after Oregon lost to Stanford and basically lost out on their title shot, guys on the team, it was taken a bit out of context, but guys on the team were saying how they didn't really want to even play in the Rose Bowl. So now that they're playing in San Antonio on December 30th, I don't know how fired up this team is going to be, and I feel like there's a chance if this is Mac Brown's game, if he's stepping down, I have a feeling that they'll let him coach this game if he wants to. So maybe the Longhorns rally around Mac in his final game.
I am such a big fan of Texas defensive lineman Jackson Jeffcoat, but I swear, Jackson, if you hurt Mariota in this game and we are
honestly,
held,
if I was Mariota, I might not play in this game.
Because
I would give my knee the full chance to heal for next season.
I mean, Texas's defense has been very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to get hurt. Oh, my gosh. I can't even. All right, moving on before I think about that.
You know what? Maybe Saban's coaching Texas by then, and people finally get that Oregon versus Saban matchup they've always been dying for.
Pow! Number seven, the Fiesta Bowl, Central Florida against Baylor. Central Florida, undefeated in conference play. Only loss this season came against South Carolina by three. However, they only won by three against USF. And Temple, they only won by four against Southern Methodist. None of those teams were bowl teams. They sort of coasted their way down to this undefeated conference record. Baylor got the door opened thanks to Oklahoma's victory over Oklahoma State, took care of Texas, and now they're in this game. Baylor enters as heavy, heavy favorites. And you've got them. That's your number one confidence pick, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's UCF's simple, like you mentioned, they're close games against, I mean, maybe it's the Knights playing to their opponent, but if it wasn't the Fiesta Bowl, it probably wouldn't be ranked even in my top 10. But since it's the Fiesta Bowl and it's a BCS Bowl, I have it where it is at number seven, which is below a couple other non-BCS Bowls. But I don't think UCF has a real good shot of winning this game, but at the same time, as we've mentioned numerous times already in this podcast, you never know in a bowl game because I mean, Baylor, it's hard to think that they won't be pumped up for a BCS bowl game.
Program first for both of them.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, Baylor has been in the last few weeks. They looked good. They looked terrible against Texas in the first half and then looked really good against Texas in the second half. So Baylor, kind of like UCF the last few weeks, is a team that you're not really sure which version is going to show up.
It seems like Baylor is and this is not necessarily a statement of like a great football team, but it's like a total team that because of everything about their mentality, their style and their approach, it's like a rhythm team. It's a team that mm-hmm. sort of plays on momentum, and it's not just with the offense and Bryce Petty, but the entire team plays that way. And when everything gets rolling, then all of a sudden things can get out of control very quickly. But like you said, Texas kept them in check for the first half. That game was 3-3 for a long time.
Yeah,
and
it was boring game.
Then finally, like Baylor scores a couple touchdowns, gets rolling, and it's like it's a, you know, then all of a sudden, before you know it, the entire sideline is doing that jumping thing that they do again. Like it's just one of those things. You turn around, you're like, wait, hold on a second. How in the world did this turn into a concert? Just a second ago, we were playing football, and now all of a sudden, everybody's jumping around. People are cracking heads. There's mosh pits on the field, and you've just gotten beat by 20. And I think Central Florida, if they want to have any chance to stay around in this game, they have got to be able to take control of it with Storm Johnson on the ground. Just hold the ball for a little bit. I think time of possession is overrated, but I don't think UCF's defense is good enough to keep Baylor in check if you continually give the ball back to Bryce Petty.
No.
Nah.
You're going to need Bortles to get some Bortles going. He's going to have to Bortles some people pretty good.
Yeah, can you believe – all right, so Bortles was named the American Athletic Conference Offensive Player of the Year today. If you'd said, all right, Chip, I will give you even odds. Will you give me $200 to say Teddy Bridgewater will be the conference's offensive player of the year? I probably would have lost $200.
Oh, hell yeah.
Teddy
got Bortles.
Teddy got Bortles. Number six, the Capital One Bowl, Wisconsin against South Carolina. I do not think that Jadeveon Clowney will pop anybody's helmet off, but you don't want to miss it just in case he does.
He might.
Wisconsin, I've got to think that Gary Anderson has this Wisconsin team ready to play just because of the way they finished against Penn State. Very, very disappointing. Played themselves out of a potential BCS at-large bid. South Carolina, that's great comeback. While the Clowney hit is obviously what got replayed 1,000 times. South Carolina's comeback with Dylan Thompson stepping into the game for an injured Connor Shaw and leading them with that last-second touchdown. South Carolina played pretty well in the second half of this game. I think that both teams, which were both very talented and potential BCS teams at different times this year, I love this matchup.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very fun matchup. And I also think this might be the Big Ten's best bet to actually beat an SEC team in a New Year's Day game this year. I think when I look at the matchups, I feel like Wisconsin's got the best shot. And it's nothing against South Carolina, it's really good. It's just I feel like Wisconsin's the best of the three teams that the Big Ten has playing on that day. So I think the matchup is very good. I like the idea of Jadeveon Clowney trying to pop off the head of James White or Melvin Gordon, seeing if that can happen. I just think it's a very cool, very fun matchup, and I think it could be a game also where, you know, it's like a 35-31 type of score that's going back and forth throughout just about the entire 60 minutes.
And that's, I think that's an interesting, you know, point now that we see this, like people want to say SEC defense or where would you like. I think that a 35-31, 38-35, or like 34-28, if you give me a back and forth shootout type feel, but a score around there, I think that's sort of my ideal spot for like the perfect back and forth, evenly matched football game.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's awesome.
Sorry. Alabama and Oklahoma. Alabama, is any disappointment for being here in the Sugar Bowl instead of the BCS title?
Yes.
Well, see, I go back to that Michigan State game when they made work of Michigan State. That's the last time they haven't been in a BCS title game, and Saban just showed no mercy in that game.
That's a different thing, though.
Because it was
you're asking me if they're disappointed to be there. Yes. Are you asking me if they're going to show mercy? No.
Oh, okay, so they're going to throttle Oklahoma, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, cool.
Nick Saban teams aren't taking days off.
Yeah, because this Oklahoma team's not that great.
No.
Okay.
As we've discussed in the campfire in recent weeks, I mean, I feel like this is of a BCS conference team, this is the most disappointing 10-2 team I've ever seen.
This is like Virginia Tech in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
Like that sort of, you're just on that level. Let's go Cotton Bowl. Missouri, Oklahoma State. Very, very, very exciting game if both teams show up. The Cotton Bowl last year was Johnny Manziel just lighting Oklahoma on fire. The Cotton Bowl's given us some really good games here in recent years. I am hoping and anticipating that we will have it again.
Yeah, I think we will too. I love this matchup. It's just stylistically and all that stuff. There's a lot to like here from both offenses that are, you know, capable of putting points on the board in a hurry. And two defenses, whereas Missouri's defense got a lot of credit, although it got torn apart by Auburn in that SEC title game, but Auburn's been tearing every defense apart. And an Oklahoma State defense that doesn't get nearly as much credit for how good it's played for most of the year. This is a very interesting matchup to me.
Number three, the Orange Bowl, Clemson and Ohio State. Ohio State knocked from the BCS title game with that loss to Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship. Clemson, I think, is happy to be in this position at 10-2. Clemson would love to erase memories of their last Orange Bowl, but the last time they were in the postseason was a comeback victory against LSU in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Ohio State was ineligible for the postseason after going 12-0 last year. What is your thought on this game? I think it's obviously you like it, so you're number three ranking, but is there anything particular that intrigues you about this matchup?
It's a matchup of two very good teams, but it's also a matchup of two teams that are kind of, you know, it's kind of a bit of a redemption angle to it, because as good as Clemson has been this year and as good as, you know, it beat LSU, it beat Georgia to start the year, but it's still got that Florida State and South Carolina monkey on its back.
Oh, yeah.
And Ohio State, you know, people all year told, you know, were telling you that, oh, they haven't played anybody. And they played a really good Michigan State team and lost. And people have taken that as, see, we told you they weren't any good. So I feel like these are two teams that are trying to get that monkey off their back, so to speak. Clemson, a win against Ohio State in a BCS bowl game makes this a successful season, whether or not it won the ACC or beat Florida State. And Ohio State, by beating Clemson, shows, you know what, we can beat good teams. We just lost to one on a certain day. So I think both of these teams have a lot to play for, and I think both of these teams will be motivated to play this game. So I think that's what helps that's what helped get it up to number three for me.
And number two, motivation will absolutely not be an issue, as Stanford and Michigan State will just take sledgehammers to each other's bodies until one team finally falls, and it's going to be awesome. Tyler Gaffney, Jeremy Langford, tremendous defenses on both sides of the ball. It's awesome. How are you expecting this one to play out?
It's going to be a 2.5-hour game, and it's probably going to be a 20-17 final. I got Michigan State winning. It's for what you mentioned. Two very, very, very similar teams, pretty much, you know, mirror images of each other for what they try to do for the most part on both offense and defense. So it's just going to be an awesome matchup because they're very good and they're very similar, and it's the Rose Bowl, and it's just going to be a great game.
The Pasadena or the Rose Bowl committee just absolutely high-fiving each other all over the place because they get that game on New Year's Day at 5:00, which is the traditional, you know, Rose Bowl slot, and then they double it back, come back with the BCS championship game in Pasadena, Florida State and Auburn. No surprise, your number one selection. Have you started thinking about the way these two teams match up, and is there any angle that you're going to pursue further as we get closer to this game?
Does Florida State become the latest defense to get torn apart?
Yeah.
That's going to be the key to it. Is will Auburn be able to move the ball with as much ease as it did against Alabama and Missouri as it did again? Is it, you know, in this game? So I don't know. It's because it's really hard to know for sure because Florida State's defense has played well this year, but you know we've questioned Ohio State's schedule all season long, and Florida State's defense really wasn't much more tested than Ohio State was. But the only thing we have to really go off of is how it performed against Clemson in that game. But even Clemson, while it was high-powered, isn't really the same kind of offense that Auburn runs. So we're yet to see Florida State against an offense like this. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that Jameis Winston and the Seminole offense are going to put up points on Auburn, because anybody can put up points on Auburn. That defense, it has a ton of talent, but it is not a good defense. So I think it's going to come down to whether or not you can stop Auburn's offense. If you can, Florida State will win. If you can't, it's going to be a coin flip.
Auburn ran 85 plays against Missouri, but only threw 11 passes. Florida mm-hmm. State has to be able to make Nick Marshall turn into a drop-back passer, not only because of that being, you know, not what Auburn wants to do. Auburn wants to run the ball, but also because Florida State, because they beat down so many teams this year, they've got a lot of depth and they've got a lot of experience. But when Auburn is running that hurry up, they don't allow you to make the substitutions to be able to take advantage of that. So make Nick Marshall throw the ball, get some incomplete passes, and don't allow this burning image of just Gus Malzahn play sheet under one hand while the other hand is just, you know, doing the hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up signal. Because, man, when you just got this feeling like it's just a snowball going down a hill when Trey Mason is up the middle, Corey Grant around the outside, up the middle, yeah. up the middle. I mean, 74 rushing attempts in that game.
I think what you need to do, I think the key is to keep the ball in Marshall's hands.
Yes.
Sell out on Mason on the reads, sell out on him, force Marshall to keep, because as we saw, Marshall gets a bit fast and loose with the football.
He'll fumble.
Yeah, so he will burn you for 20 yards here and there, but you can knock the ball out of there. So if he burns you for a few times, but you force a few turnovers, it's an end game. You know, you're winning in the long run. So I think if I'm Florida State, my plan is to sell out on Mason, make Marshall do it. He's more than capable of doing it, but I think you have a better chance of stopping them if you're making Marshall do everything.
I agree. 35 bowl games, all ranked 35-1. Tom Fornelli is the man who got us set. You can read it at cbssports.com for more of his preview of it. And be sure to go to the bowl page where you get to videos and breakdowns and predictions of all 35 of these bowl games. We've got so much more coming to you here in the next couple weeks. We will be back with expert picks against the spread weekend by weekend. And anything more to come, we'll probably come back with some coaching changes once we see a couple more dominoes fall. And all you need to do is go to iTunes and subscribe, and you don't even have to worry about it. The new podcast show up first. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.